Sanchez, Coutinho! Sanchez, wonderful! Suarez! Oh, what a goal! Maybe the best of the match!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Time Banter. We've been off for quite a while and we come back in a week that's very special because of all the football that's been happening. We had weekend action as well as midweek action and more weekend action to come. I want to start with MJ because, again, we find ourselves with Chelsea on top of the league and not just that, they're playing very good football. Now, you being a Conte quote-unquote hater, but at the same time a Chelsea fan, what are your thoughts at this particular point in time? I'm sure he's now convinced you that he has what it takes to win the title. So do you still back him as a manager or do you still have your reservations?
Thank you, Dowdy. Great to be back in the show. I want to start by showing I'm the bigger man as opposed to Buddy here. I am still opposed to Conte and I probably always will be, but I'm big enough to admit he's proving me wrong. And it looks set to keep proving me wrong for some time. You asked me, do I still back the man? No, I never have. I probably never will. But he's delivering. And at the end of the day, that's what counts. He has delivered a 10-match winning sequence. No Chelsea manager except Mourinho has ever done that. If he wins the next game, he'll set a new mark for Chelsea winning 11 games in a row. To win 10 games in this league, competitive as it is, without conceding just two goals, is remarkable. Regards to the team, regards to the manager. So. Fair play to him. He has shown flexibility I didn't know he had in how he has switched the players at times. Bringing back Fabregas was certainly a surprise. I know many people who thought that Fabregas cannot survive in a two-man midfield. Conte has shown that under the right circumstances, against limited opposition such as West Brom and Sunderland, you can indeed play Fabregas in the centre midfield. I need to note, he also played him against City, which was even more remarkable. I have my doubts about the success of that experiment, but he won the game, and at the end of the day, that's all that counts as a manager. So that's my two cents on Conte. He's doing well. Long may he continue to do well, but no, I can't back the man. Any manager who's a my way or the highway sort of manager is not destined to succeed at Chelsea, and really he's not the sort of manager I have time for.
But I'm confused though, because so what type of manager do you want? Most people who support their teams just want someone who can win. So people are even willing to take Mourinho, my new friends, because they don't care about the style or the personality of the manager. They just want trophies. This guy looks like someone who can deliver that at Chelsea. So why do you have an issue with that?
We've had many managers who won trophies at Chelsea. He's no different from Benitez. He would be no different from Hiddink, Ancelotti, Mourinho, Di Matteo. So winning it, and all those managers at the time they left, Chelsea fans booed them. So, and I hesitate to add, we can see the example of Arsenal. Wenger is the most successful manager in Arsenal's history, yet I see so many Arsenal fans booing the man and wanting him gone. Winning trophies is not enough for most fans, truth be told. Usually people want something more than that. They want a manager who delivers the sort of football they like and who they think is a fit with the club. So Conte is going to win trophies and he plays good football, don't get me wrong. I just don't think he's the right fit for Chelsea. The managers who can do well at Chelsea are managers who know to take the handbrake off and let the players play the game. That would be, we've only really ever had managers like that. His name was Ancelotti. And I think that's the sort of manager you'd want to see at Chelsea, because the sort of manager who managed Chelsea maybe for 3-4 years without having a fight with the players or a fight with Abramovich.
Well, the man you mentioned, Ancelotti, who just took over Bayern Munich, he replaced Pep Guardiola, who very many people who aren't fans of him are happy with the way things are going, because it seems the Premier League is not as easy as perhaps he thought it was. And yet at the beginning of the season, everyone thought Man City would run away with it. There were 2-0 winners against Watford. They have Arsenal coming up next, but obviously as an Arsenal fan, we'll touch on Arsenal and their performance midweek. But City, well, on paper, those were 3 points. I think everyone expected them to bounce back from their loss against Leicester, which was a very, very intriguing game, because you and I were chatting on a WhatsApp group how the way they set up was basically what Leicester needed to play their football. So it's like they just played into their hands. And I don't know why a manager of Guardiola's caliber wouldn't be able to see that and address the problem. And even during the game, it persisted and he didn't, you know, make any attempt to address it. And now they have Arsenal, which is another good team on the counter and attacking. So how do you see this playing out, and how have you assessed Pep Guardiola? We haven't chatted during this period when he's been struggling.
Thank you, Dawdy. Man City, I mean, that Leicester game, what was he thinking? Because right from the word go, you would see that the way he had set up his team was he was going to get completely beaten. He had two fullbacks playing as centre-halves. He played a back three, and he was playing a back three that was so high up the pitch. And he, as you said, he just played right into Claudio Ranieri's hands. Because Leicester City, I know, was giving an interview, I think Drinkwater, or one of the centre-backs, either Huth or Morgan. And he was talking about the difference of why they're struggling this season compared to the way they performed last season. And he said now teams know what to expect from them. Teams know that Leicester City actually will give you possession and hit you on the break. They know Mahrez one-on-one against any defender. He definitely do fancy Mahrez. So now teams actually having two players marking Mahrez. Teams were looking out for the long ball over the top from Drinkwater to Vardy. So now teams' defenses are actually sitting much deeper. So that long ball is either being sorted out by the defenders or it's going straight to the goalkeeper. So for Man City to come out and play that high up the pitch with three centre backs, I mean, it did three centre backs, actually one centre back and two full backs. It just didn't make sense. And from the word go, you would see that Guardiola was going to get smashed actually. But for me, it was a huge disappointment. But Man City are going through a phase. And he said immediately after the game, it's about how well you react after a loss. And I always say this, as far as leagues are concerned, it's about how well you bounce back after that one loss. Because Chelsea, the true testament, if they're going to be champions or not, it's going to be how they react after they lose a game. After that streak is broken, what next? Diego Costa is one yellow card away from a suspension? And the last yellow card he got, before the Arsenal game, before they said this run. So those are the questions that are factored in when it comes to how you perform at the end of the season. So for me, it's a huge disappointment that he lost the game. Credit to him for actually bouncing back. But now he has Arsenal to face. He's going to be without Fernandinho, suspension. We all know what happened to him. Aguero, same issue.
Gundogan as well
is out. So you're looking at almost like his spine of the team is completely going. Fernandinho was so important in that team because he was probably the smartest midfielder they had. He's the one who would drop and pick the ball, cover the full backs as well. So without him in the equation, they're going to struggle. And without Aguero's goals, we all know they're going to struggle. Iheanacho is a good striker, but I don't think he's a striker that can lead the line. He's good as far as making an impact is concerned. I don't think it's someone who's going to lead the line. I actually do fancy Guardiola starting Nolito in these big games or in this Christmas break, during this Christmas period, compared to Iheanacho. But it's going to be really testing for Guardiola. And this is what the Premiership is about, because you go and face one team that's going to play long, the other team is going to play short, then the other team is going to come and just kick you. So it's the variations that from the opposition is a true telling of a champion as far as the Premiership is concerned. So for Guardiola, it's time for him to earn his corn. Is he the best manager in the world? I think by May we will know, or probably even earlier than this, because it looks like now probably the wheels are coming off.
But he's not the best tackling coach, that's for sure. He doesn't bother training.
He said he didn't do tackles, so wait and see. Well, at least now teams know how to play against him, so it'll be interesting, the game against Arsenal. Unfortunately, Arsenal. And Arsene Wenger is always on his high horse as far as teams are concerned. He wants to go and play the way, let's say, Leicester City play. He will want to be more possession than Man City, which is easier said than done. But it's going to be an intriguing game. But we'll wait and see on Sunday.
Buddy, I just wanted, before I give my own two thoughts, I wanted to pick up on something you said at the end there about Wenger. I seem to recall that, was it last season, the season before, where Wenger went to the Etihad, park the bus and 1-2-0. Why don't you think Wenger may do the same thing this time?
I know, because one, as far as Man City, the current Man City setup, as Dowdy said, we said Fernandinho is out. So probably Fernando will start there. Yeah, Trey will come in probably for Gundogan. They'll still have Silva. And they're still a very good side. But still, I feel that as far as the players he has at his disposal is concerned, I feel Arsenal players are probably at par. Then the other issue that's probably the most important in this is the confidence that the players have. Guardiola wants his team to play with possession. And possess the ball means you're confident with the ball. But now you're looking at a situation where no one wants to come and pick the ball. John Stones is getting caught in possession. So probably his confidence is not that high. So probably even as Guardiola as a coach probably needs to rethink his ways and say probably for this particular game let's just get the ball out from the back as quick as possible because these people know what to do. Arsenal have pace in their ranks, Walcott, Chamberlain, Sanchez. So probably the exact pressure on the Man City back line. So that's why I actually feel that for Wenger, he may not even need to change his game plan for his particular game. He can just steal the boys' got and play the way you've been playing, and he will still get the 3 points.
I see. So you think it's because Wenger thinks that City is in a tough spot at the moment that he'll go out and be confident and attack them?
Yeah. I see no reason why he shouldn't. I see Man City are there for you taking. With that back line, Man City are there for you taking. There's no better time to play them than now.
My own thinking is that just like we saw, was it 2 months ago when Arsenal went to Old Trafford again, Wenger will show up here and take his draw. If he can nick a goal on the counter, he'll be more than happy. But he's going to play this game not to lose it. Wenger will think, and I agree with him, that he'll win the title in the succeeding games. But the key is not to lose distance here on City in a big game.
However, he lost to Everton midweek, so don't you think those nil points will influence him to want and get to go ahead and push for 3 points just so he doesn't fall too far behind Chelsea?
No, because what I saw at Old Trafford suggests to me that Wenger has come to think of the league as a 38-game campaign. The key now is that he's in a hole because he lost. The first thing you do when you're in a hole is you stop digging. That game against Everton, if Wenger had shut up shop that game, maybe you'd be looking at 3 points right now. It was a game where the license the fullbacks from Everton were allowed was incredible. So I think Wenger will take the lesson from that and remember that City are a team that depend a lot on width and dominate the game and attacking. What he will look to do is shut the game up, wait them out, and look to score on the counter. I think he will have watched the game, the last home game City played against Chelsea, and he will have seen that when City are on their game, they are pretty much unplayable. Now, Chelsea should have lost that game considerably, but for the fact that De Bruyne misplaced his shooting boots, as did Kun Aguero. And Wenger will not be judging City based on what they performed against Leicester. He'll be judging them based on those first 60 minutes that he saw against Chelsea. So he'll come out. He'll have Sanchez and Walcott for nuisance value. Play to chase the balls, the passes, also can play them. Look to nick one on the counter, but really, he'll be telling his players, if we get in at halftime, 0-0, we can then look to expand the game. But the key is not to concede. But I also want to touch on a couple of things Buddy said, which is, there's a question about whether Guardiola needs to adapt his game. I had you, Dowdy, mention the issue of tackling. I had Buddy mention why is he setting up with the high back line? Why doesn't he respect the fact that in the Premier League you have teams like Leicester? And what I would say is that, one, Chelsea played Leicester with the exact same system. Three at the back, high line. Chelsea won that game. The issue isn't having the high line or three at the back. The issue is whether you can execute what you need to do. Unlike City, Chelsea moved the ball when they played Leicester and scored early and went on to win the game. If you watch that City game, I think their second shot on target came after the 80th minute. They had 4 shots on target, 3 came after the 80th minute. Most of that game, City moved the ball very slowly. They passed in front of Leicester. That is a prime example of how to lose to Leicester City. Play the game in front of you. Play the ball in front of them. They sit back with their 8 defenders. They get the ball from them. They counter. I think Guardiola mentioned as well, the key is that we weren't aggressive enough. They failed to put pressure on the Leicester players, and as a result, they lost the way most teams lose to Leicester in sudden moments. They get the ball, 3 passes later, they scored. So I actually think that it wasn't the formation that was the issue. I thought it was the intensity of the players, and that really goes on the coach. He failed to prepare the players mentally for the game. When you play Leicester, you cannot afford to be slow in your game. You have to pass the ball as quickly as Leicester do. Because every second you take on the ball, Leicester has time to get their 2 banks of 4 behind the ball, wait, counter. There have been a couple of other comments people have made about Guardiola, such as not tackling. Well, you don't need to tackle if you never lose the ball. I think the issue for Guardiola is that his team kept losing the ball and in dangerous areas. When they played Chelsea against City in those first 6 minutes, they make many tackles. The reason it didn't matter is because most of the time they had the ball, all they pressed and got the ball back the moment it was lost. And so I think that's what Guardiola is looking at. He's looking at bringing that football and executing it. He hasn't been able to execute consistently, and I think that's where he should really be criticized. The other comments people have made, I took note of them. People say that he rotates his team. When he was at Bayern Munich, he rotated his team for 100 games straight. Didn't stop Bayern winning the title. It's what he does. It's his method.
And did he rotate Barcelona, though?
He didn't.
Let me finish, buddy. Do you know the season Ferguson won the title in the Champions League, 2008, he rotated his team every single game that season. In the league, only Ronaldo and Vidic started 30 games or more. Think about that. This was a team that had Ferdinand, it had Vidic, it had Rooney, it had Tevez. But those guys were starting less than 30 games that season. That's how often Ferguson went 165 games in a row without naming the same starting lineup.
There's nothing wrong, MJ. There's nothing wrong with rotating your players. Yes.
But
if you have the quality.
The reason I raised...
There's nothing wrong if... I mean, if Tevez probably was... He's a very good striker. He had Saha. So there's nothing wrong with that. So for me, as far as rotation is concerned, you can rotate if you have the quality. There's nothing wrong with that. Then the issue about the tackling, if anyone watched the Barcelona team at its prime, probably under Guardiola, when the Xavis and the Iniestas and who, and were knocking Arsenal out of every Champions League whenever they were drawn against them. One thing that Barcelona do is... I need to watch how fast they react, or that Barcelona side used to react whenever they would lose the ball. Whenever they would lose the ball, they would break play somehow. That's the essence of possession. Because one, you don't have the ball, you have your players scattered all over the pitch. So if you lose it, not everyone is in their positions. So to give them a chance to get back into their positions, the one thing you need to do is break play. So you have Barcelona players making all kinds of stupid fouls. They nag your shot or they tap you. And that's why most people would say Barcelona players either divey or probably they are rough and they always cry when they are touched. Simply because their style of football necessitated that they had to what? Somehow break the flow of the game whenever they need to have the ball, which is not happening with Man City.
And
Man City, and initially, when Man City were winning games, whenever they would reach, I mean, look at the first game against Man United, that first half, whenever Man City would lose the ball,
they'd get back in quickly.
David Silva, count the number of fouls he made in that first half, the small fouls of pulling a shot, and just to give your players a chance to get back in position. So that's the essence of the position.
I agree with you, buddy.
Best approach.
That, which is why I say
so
that.
So the tackling counts.
But that's why you and I are saying the same thing. My point earlier was that Guardiola's system is fine. The issue is that he's not being able to execute it consistently. When he executes it, not few teams can live with it. The best example is Chelsea, of the best defense in the league. In that first half against City, if they'd been 3-0 down at halftime, nobody would have thought it was an unfair scoreline. That was them executing Guardiola's tactics. And he said so after the game. He said that the only issue I have with my players is that they've not been able to play the way they did against Chelsea. If his team plays that way, nobody will have any criticisms about Guardiola. Buddy brought up that first half against United when they played that way. They played United off the park. When City won their first six games, Guardiola was rotating. Nobody was complaining because the results were coming. The players were doing their job. It's as the players have dropped off that you see people raising up these issues that aren't part of the reason for the decline. He was rotating when he was winning. He's rotating when he's losing. That it's a consistent factor. It's not the reason for the decline in results. But I agree with you that the pressing is not being done. The intensity is not there. And I agree with you, that's why they're losing. But that's an issue for which Guardiola can rightly be held accountable. He should not be held accountable for the squad rotation. I raised the issue of the 2007-2008 United team. I guarantee you, there will be more than two City players who start more than 30 league games under Guardiola. In that sense, he will have done a better job than Ferguson did of playing his best players game after game. Another point I want to address here before you jump in, buddy, is another issue that Guardiola has been attacked for. Is his team's defensive ability. I think it was Daoudi's quip about failing to tackle. If you can't tackle, how can you be defending well? Well, on the eve of the game against Chelsea, City had a better defense than Arsenal did. And Arsenal employ one man whose sole job is to tackle, Coughlin. Nobody says Arsenal don't tackle. But City had a better defense than Arsenal on the eve of the game against Chelsea. Which tells you that a good Guardiola's method works when executed in terms of defending. You don't need to tackle if you win the ball back by pressing the opposition. But just, I think it's
just before I put the issue, this issue to bed, I'll just say this. The rotation counts for Guardiola. And also for, I'll bring in Liverpool. It counts for Guardiola mainly because of the way he wants to play. The intensity and the work rate he requires from his players means that he has to somehow rotate the players. So that the performances actually don't go below par. So rotation is just fade as far as that is concerned. That's why across all the teams he has coached, at some point he always brings in either, he would bring in kids from the academy in Bayern. He had all these players who were throwing in. So at Man City, he's going to try and do the same thing. But Man City and the Premiership is different from the rest of our leagues because the quality of opposition you're going to face week in, week out is going to be top-notch. It won't be like in Spain where probably you'll play a Levante, all due respect to Levante, but you do fancy Barcelona's second string side beating Levante. Same thing in German. Probably you do fancy Bayern's second team beating, let's say, which team? Hoffenheim is on form now. I don't say Hoffenheim. But whichever team, let's say Munich or something, or some other small team. But the Premiership, you can't afford to have your second string side going and play against Everton and expect them to get something. No. Week in, week out, you have to bring out your best players. And you're asking them to play at a very high intensity, play a high press, and then the next weekend they're the same thing. Midweek they go and do Champions League. So at the end of the day, you're forced to rotate. By hook or crook, you have to rotate.
If the Premier League,
it's beyond him.
If the Premier League is so good, how did a midfield that had O'Shea and Fletcher win the league? The quality of the Premier League is not as high as you think it is, buddy. And the way you know this is that you look at the Europa League. When was the last time you saw a team, a mid-table team in the Premiership, go all the way in the Europa League and actually win it?
Then why isn't Guardiola top of the table already?
No, my point is that it's taking him a while to execute his tactics. Conte has been able to execute his tactics, the players adopt them, and you've seen the change in results. He himself has said he's amazed by how quickly Chelsea players picked it up. It takes a while to teach people a different way of playing football. And so that's what I'd say is holding Guardiola back. But you mentioned the quality of the league. I thank you for that, because it brings me up to my next point, which is the real issue for Guardiola. This is when he manages, making sure you beat the minnows in the league. And I can't minnow anybody below sixth place. So Everton downwards is a minnow. You really should be beating those teams if you want to win the title. And so for Guardiola, the issue for him is dropping points against Middlesbrough, that defeat against Leicester. And so if Guardiola's football was being executed the way he wants it to be, it would be good enough to take care of the team seventh and below. He may struggle against top teams because they have similar players with similar quality. But let's not deceive ourselves that the Premier League is full of Barcelonas. It's not. Most teams in the Premiership are journeyman teams. And you can beat them if the players execute your style the way you want them to.
Right, let's move over to the red half of Manchester, where Guardiola's arch nemesis Mourinho is finally having luck go his way. I watched the highlights of this game against Crystal Palace, and there were so many dodgy decisions that went against them. So I could see from their perspective how unlucky they've been recently, although they managed to turn it around. But they did have a bit of luck on their side, particularly with Rojo and those tackles that he made. He should have been sent off, in my opinion, in both that game and the one against Everton. But it seems Lady Luck is smiling in the red half of Manchester, not so much the blue one, recently anyway. So do you see Mourinho carrying on the momentum, or are these wins just a reflection of something that they've always been doing, and basically they've been unlucky and now the luck is turning around because they've been dominating their games? What are your thoughts, buddy?
Dowdy, last night you mentioned the refereeing decisions. Spot on. It was one of those dodgy games. But United, it's true they have been unlucky in particular games. But this game, you mentioned Rojo should have got a red card. They are one of their goals. Pogba's goal, slight suspicion of offside.
But the Mata goal was onside.
But also there was a handball leading up to Pogba's goal. So some of the things cancelled themselves out. And so for United, I mean, credit to them for winning the game. For me, I just felt they were just one win away from turning this around because they've been so close. But the issue has been, and you would even feel at times probably scraping into the minds of the players when they go 1-0 up, somehow they retreat and they invite opposition to attack them. But credit to them, it's probably Crystal Palace is a game that probably most teams will fancy getting 3 points against. Crystal Palace are struggling at the moment. But credit to United, you can only beat what's in front of you. But United, at least now you can still that Jose Mourinho has a starting 11 of sorts. It's not his best starting 11, but he has somehow got all his pieces together. He's making them work. Phil Jones and also Valencia. Carrick is back in midfield. Carrick is, well, he's very pivotal to them. If he can get him to play, I don't know, probably even 75% of their games till the end of the season, then they should fancy their chances of qualifying for Europe. I still don't think they'll win the league. That's completely out of the picture now. But at least they should fancy their chances qualifying for Europe, which probably is a big, it's not a big step up, but it's better than where United were previously. And also Pogba is settling in, credit
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, he's doing very well. Looks like a 50 million pound player now.
Probably 40 million, give or take, five million. So he's probably in and out there, but he's settling in, he's gelling. But for me, there's still a number of questions. I feel Mata should be in that team. I don't know how Mourinho is going to find a way of putting him in. So all those issues, Martial needs to score goals. Because I do feel at some point, I don't know how good Zlatan's body is, but I do feel that this Christmas break is going to take its toll on him. I don't know what kind of player will come out at the turn of the year. Probably the fatigue won't build up because he has become very instrumental to them. The link-up play, he brings Pogba into play. He offers the runners wide of him into play. But the huge thing for me is the defense. The defense looks settled. And Mourinho has always built his title-winning sides based on solid defense.
They lost by...
They lost by again because you would feel the energy. The Spurs game, the energy he brought on when he came on, you would actually feel probably United were missing that true energy. So it's kind of sad that they lost him. We're still not sure of how long he was going to be out, but he's one player who probably they need to find a way of putting him into that mix also, because it looks like Mourinho is getting a picture of what he wants from his team. There's still a few missing pieces here and there, but United do look comfortable at the moment. The luck will turn, but it's all about the reaction. And the huge positive for me is somehow they have kept on improving their performances. The wins were not coming, but the performances were definitely worth it. So now that they're winning, let's me hope that they can carry this on. And most United fans also wish for this, because for him, it was actually very sad. You play good football and still lose. Most of them are thinking, has David Moyes cast us? So it's probably, we're going to be like this for the next, I don't know, how long.
But do you see them finishing in the top four? Because for that to happen, that means either Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal or Man City drops out. And that includes Tottenham as well, who are just above Manchester United. So we're almost halfway the season. And based on the way you're seeing these teams perform, do you see Manchester United having a chance of pipping any one of the other teams? MJ, I'll pose that one to you.
Yes, I don't think Liverpool finish in the top four.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Because of their defense of theirs. You cannot, I think we're in that WhatsApp group, but I'll share it for the viewers. That game against Crystal Palace was appalling. And whenever I come to where this Liverpool defense, I think of that game against Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace only 13 in that game, but every time the ball went high up to Lovren, he coughed up a goal. And we watched that defense cost them against Bournemouth. Now they have their games, such as when they play Middlesbrough. When the attack of Liverpool is running the game, the defense has nothing to fear. But any time you even sneeze on their defense, it opens up. And this league is such that, and I'll give this to Badi, there's enough firepower in most teams that they will ask a question or two. And whenever you ask questions about the Liverpool defense, the wrong answer is returned. It fails every exam it's given. And you cannot, no team, in my opinion, can deliver Champions League football to its fan base with a defense like the one Liverpool does. Whether it's the system or it's acquired the players, I lean more towards acquired the players. I don't think Lovren is suitable for a top four team. Or Klein, actually. I have my doubts about Klein. But that defense of Liverpool is why I don't think they can go anywhere. But I was listening to Badi's analysis of the future of United. I think the last time we spoke, I thought it was more an issue of faith on my side of whether Mourinho would pull it through, because I'd seen him do it before, but I wasn't sure whether he could do it. He seems to be doing it. But the game of the weekend is going to be a test. They're playing West Brom, and remarkably, for all the non-believers out there, this is a West Brom team that's actually scored more goals than Manchester United this season. The man of the hour, everybody's talking about him, Mr. Salomon Rondon, on 7 goals. This is remarkable. I mean, how many times can you say that West Brom have scored more goals than United, that Tony Pulis team?
Rugby,
is,
the rugby team.
Yeah. Once you cut out the top five, that is Chelsea through Spurs, Only one team in this league has scored more goals than West Brom, and that's Crystal Palace, all the way down in 16th. That is remarkable. And and the game is at the Hawthorns, so I think we can expect a genuine testing. We will see in this game if the defense of United is what we all think it is, because Rondon is going to give them a genuine walkover. He gave Chelsea a genuine walkover. He's a handful. And West Brom certainly are playing the football he appreciates. This last game, he did something which only one other man has ever done. He's got a hat-trick of headers. I think it's quite obvious what's going to happen in this game. Chris Brunch and Matt Phillips, they're just going to put the ball up, put it on his head. And we'll see if Phil Jones and Rojo can withstand the badge. If they can, I think they have enough to beat West Brom. But this will be the test.
Well, I just wanted to touch on Liverpool because obviously on Monday night they're having that Merseyside derby, Everton against Liverpool. Everton obviously beating Arsenal, which should boost their confidence. They're unbeaten at home this season, so that's a very tough place to go. Although if there's one team that can break that record, it's obviously Liverpool, who themselves had a very good win midweek. So, but did you see Liverpool disappointing Everton, or did you see Everton disappointing Liverpool? Are they going to share the spoils? How do you think this will leave Merseyside feeling?
It's going to be a very interesting game, because the result that Everton got against Arsenal probably was based on the fact that of how well they played the last 70 minutes, probably not even 70, the last 60 minutes of that game, the way they finished the first half and the way they played in the second half, because they started that game very slow. The intensity was so low, and even Ronald Koeman came out and said he said that half time he had to tell the players, you know, you need to step up the intensity, get into your players' faces, get into Arsenal players' faces and etc and all that. While Liverpool on the other side is a team who start with a bang. That's how they start games. They start the games with a bang. So in the first 15 minutes, I always say this, if you don't consider against Liverpool in the first 15, 20 minutes, then you should fancy your chances against them. But Liverpool, as MJ said, the issue is that defense. How many times will they manage to outscore the opposition? Because, one, there's a small issue of Milner playing left back. It has worked, but you can only push your luck as far as possible. I feel that luck is running out.
But wouldn't one argue, though, that they're lacking Coutinho, they're lacking Sturridge, and still, I mean, they are in second place with all these issues, and we're coming to January. So isn't there a possibility that they can strengthen in Jan and, you know, carry on and mount a serious title challenge? They're in a very good place
The problem isn't even with their attack. You mentioned Sturridge and who and Coutinho. The problem with Liverpool is simply their defense. There was a whole issue with their goalkeeping as well. I mean, who is their first choice at the moment? That question is up in the air all of a sudden, because partly down to a Neville brothers. But for Liverpool, it's about how well they can sort out that defense. If they do not concede, if they can, I mean, there are games where they won't need to go and win 1-0. The way Chelsea is winning some of these games, that's why I actually think Chelsea may go the whole 9 yards and be champions at the end of the season. Liverpool need to be able to grind out results, because when Liverpool score the first goal, not even the opposition is scared. Even the fans in the stadium are still thinking, you know what, we are still in this. Even when Liverpool are 2-0 up, you still fancy your chances against them, because they have become that suspect. You get. So the issue about whether they will sign someone in January or not. January signings, I'm always skeptical about general signings, unless they're within the league. That means you're picking from
Southampton.
Yeah, Southampton. they're supermarket. Or you're picking from somewhere else. But if you can bring in someone from to settle into the league, he's not had pieces on the league with the team, he has not trained with his colleagues. So probably you're looking at him settling in at the next season. That's for the earliest even. So Liverpool, it's still a work in progress. That defense needs to be improved. They can't approach all matches. I always talk about amateur boxing fights, because it's about throwing punches. There's no technique and what. That's what Liverpool are doing at the moment. Klopp, like City, says it's all action and what. But I feel there are games where they're going to be wanting. For Everton, if they can start with the same intensity that they played for most of the game against Arsenal, then they should fancy their chances as well. They have that impressive record at home. But Ronald Koeman was probably two losses away from being booted, because had he lost the game against Arsenal and then lost the Merseyside derby, then probably would be looking for a job after Monday.
Okay. So, yes, MJ, please go ahead.
So, I want to give you some context, just how badly Liverpool's statistics are defensively. As of now, Liverpool have conceded 20 goals in the league. That is the 11th worst defense in the league. In the top 10, only one team has a worst worst defensive record, and that's the team in 10th position, Bournemouth. That's how badly they're defending. At this rate, if they keep it up, Liverpool concede 48 goals this season. Last season, you had to go down to 7th place to find a team that conceded more than 48 goals. That was West Ham at 51. Everybody else conceded less than 42. Just to give you the context in which we're operating here, in terms, when we talk about bad defensive records, that's this Liverpool team. And mind you, they're yet to visit City. I've seen City play. Somebody's due for a thrashing when they play City. And I wouldn't be surprised to find it being Liverpool. Because if City can reproduce those 60 minutes they produce against Chelsea, against a defense like Liverpool, that would be a massacre.
Isn't the reverse true because of Liverpool's potent attack with regards to City's defense?
No, but see, that's the exact thing. When a team plays City on the front foot, that's when you get massacred. Chelsea played City on the front foot. City kept getting all that space behind the lines because Chelsea were playing a high line. I don't know how many times I saw Fernandinho or Sané stroll through the Chelsea midfield because we were playing a Kante and Fabregas. Those two weren't even in the game. If they can grab a team like Liverpool, who are saying, okay, City, we'll play you at your game. We won't try to park the bus where Leicester did. We think we can beat you. I think you'll see De Bruyne and Silva have a field day that day. And so that's what we're talking about here with Liverpool. That Buddy said there's even a 2-0 down, you feel there's something. And that, it reminds me of Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool. That was the exact mentality teams had against them. I believe Crystal Palace were 3-0 down and they still thought they could get a goal. They could get something in the game. You can't afford to give the opposition that sort of hope in football. And so it's going to catch up with Liverpool. And I predict that game that they had, we will see it. If they I wouldn't be surprised if they concede 3 or 4 that game.
But Liverpool may actually win that game. Because I'm actually trying to remember how the Borussia Dortmund Bayern games would pan out. Where you had Klopp there saying, because the way he plays is when he wins the ball, all his runners are storming forward. That's his style of play.
But that's the same way City do.
Now, each time Man City will lose the ball.
So
they may not lose the ball, they may lose, but they'll definitely also score.
Well, my point is, as long as De Bruyne has his shooting boots on, you'll see something. We'll see one of those results that Arsenal post up so frequently in big games. That's my prediction.
Right, that's enough of the Premier League. There was a Champions League draw this week, and a few interesting ones. But yeah, as an Arsenal fan, it looks like Lady Luck was not having any time for Arsenal fans, because if it wasn't Bayern Munich, it was Barcelona. That's what the second place team got. So I don't know if you're satisfied with getting Bayern Munich in the next round. Fortunately, obviously, the first game is away. That means depending on how that result goes, you know exactly what you need at home. Obviously, finishing in the second place in recent times, that meant Arsenal had to play at home first and then go away, which some people are arguing is a disadvantage of sorts. I don't know what your opinion is on that one.
Lady Luck was actually on Arsenal's side, because Barcelona, give me Bayern any day.
No, but you see, that's what people say. Whenever these draws come out in this period of time, people look at the form at that point in time and say, the guys aren't doing well. However, in Feb, when these things kick off, you don't know how Bayern will be doing. They might be a different team altogether, and Arsenal might have injuries and that kind of thing. So I don't think you can judge Bayern based on their form now. You need to judge them based on their form then. And Bayern, historically in Europe, I mean, Bayern against Arsenal, most betting people, I think, would put their money on Bayern.
I think the Bayern-Arsenal games compared to the Barcelona-Arsenal games have been a lot closer. Because Barcelona, you always did feel like going to knock out Arsenal. Arsenal would get one goal back and Barcelona go and equalize. Why the Bayern games, actually, Arsenal have fancied their chances. But as you said, the advantage Arsenal have this time is they're going to play the second leg at the Emirates. But it's early days. As you're saying, it's just December now. We don't know what form these teams will be in February. Bayern, for one, have been not struggling exactly, but they haven't been that convincing the other previous seasons, because it's a small team called Leipzig is somehow determined on running away with the Bundesliga this season. But for me, outside of the league positions and all these things, Bayern, just as a unit, when you look at the team at the moment, this may change. At the moment, they're not settled, because it's only, I think, just the last two games where Robin and Ribery are actually playing again. Muller had gone, I don't know, 9 minutes without scoring a goal. He finally scored a goal. Lewandowski has renewed his contract, so probably that should somehow increase his stake and help him with goals. At the back, Boateng had that whole fight with the club hierarchies. The last game they played again, he was on the bench. So Martinez and what's his name? Hamos, I once playing. Lam probably you do feel is what this should be. This is last season. Age is becoming an issue. Alaba, there all this talk of him probably leaving Bayern in the summer. So for Bayern, moment, it's not a settled team. Angelotti, of course, there were so many questions. People are saying, I mean, Guardiola won the league so convincingly. This team, why aren't you doing the same? So Bayern, the moment, the team has not settled. How that will pan out in February, I don't know. Probably by February, the team would have settled. Of course, they have the winter break. That was a huge advantage to them as well. Arsenal will be playing gaming, probably two games a week, while the Bayern Munich players will be somewhere resting. So it's going to be, there's so many palpitations that are involved in this. But for me, it's a good draw as far as compared to getting Barcelona. PSG Barcelona is going to be a very tricky game. PSG at Barcelona. I feel PSG have always come close to knocking out Barcelona. And I feel this may just be the right time. Because Barcelona, the biggest issue for them is they do not have a bench. When you look at them being on someone change the game, there's no one. If he just is not on the pitch, there's no cohesion in the midfield. The front three somehow look different without him on the pitch. Luckily, he has come back. So probably if he can stay fit till February, they should face their chances against PSG. But the main thing is I think the second leg being at Emirates and also Barcelona having a second leg will be a key.
But for PSG, you mentioned that the disadvantage Barcelona has. For PSG, the problem they have is that they have Cavani. Now, this is a guy who, given a golden chance, he used to be a really prolific striker when he was in Italy. I don't know what happened when he came to France, but he's against Arsenal, those games there, he really missed so many sitters. He literally cost PSG the first place, if you think about it. And obviously, against Barcelona, you don't get that many chances. There are a few teams in Spain which surprisingly beat Barcelona comfortably, and I'm always amazed at how that happens in the domestic league, but you rarely see it in Europe. I think I've only ever seen it once, and that was when Bayern Munich dismantled Barcelona. But apart from that, whenever Barcelona have their pants pulled down, it's normally in the Spanish league, never in Europe. I don't think I've seen it that many times.
I only comment on the one leg here, which I think most will be talking about, listen, with the specs of the Premiership, which is the Arsenal-Bayern Munich tie. I actually think that this tie is likely to go Bayern's way. And the reason I do that is based on just a few observations. One is the fact that actually there was a study done about knockout stages. Is it true that the team that has the second leg at home has an advantage? That's what common sense would seem to say, because when you think about it, why wouldn't it be? After all, you play at home and you know how many goals you need to go to get through. They did a study. That is, if you look at the quarterfinals and you compare teams that where a runner-up plays, so a team that was a runner-up managed to survive the second leg and get to the quarterfinal, and a team that was a winner of its group stage and survived the second round and get the quarterfinal, there's actually no difference in results. 50% of runners-up win their games, 50% of group winners win their games. The reason why you see home advantage having an influence on results in the second leg is because normally when a team wins this group, it's a strong team. Normally a team finishes runner-up, it's a weak team. That's what's driving this. But if the teams of roughly equivalent strength, home or away, who plays first, who doesn't actually affect the results. And I think we'd all agree, Bayern and Arsenal are at least comparable. You might argue perhaps the Bayern players are a little over the hill. You might argue the Arsenal players have not really proven themselves on the highest stage. But if you look player for player, we're talking about players of roughly equal ability. And so when you add into the fact, in my opinion, that the Bayern team has players like Robben and Ribery who may be getting older but actually know how to win these games, I think that experience would give them the edge. Assuming that they don't lose them to injury or some freak accident doesn't come, I think the gap is closer than it used to be, but I still think that experience will give Bayern the edge in this knockout game.
Another game which I'm really excited about is the Sevilla against Leicester. MJ, you spoke about how Leicester are going all out for the Champions League. Now, Sevilla, well, if you didn't really know much about football, you might think that's a team you probably fancy. You know, they've done it in UEFA, but not really in the Champions League. So, buddy, how do you think Leicester will cope against Sevilla. Sevilla are playing at home first, so Leicester will have the final game at the King Power Stadium, which some people would argue is an advantage. But do you think they have enough to go past Sevilla, who are unable, unfortunately, to defend the Sevilla Cup, a.k.a. UEFA Cup?
They do, but it depends on which Leicester City side is going to show up. Is it the side that plays in the Premiership but its last game, or is it the side that has been playing in Europe? Because in Europe, I mean, they have been completely outstanding, save for like their last game. But, I mean, they were home and dry, so that result didn't count. But against Sevilla, early in the season were playing fantastic football. Of course, they was being inspired by Samir Nasri, who somehow looked like he had settled, found a team that was appreciating.
Was he sold or he's on loan? I'm not sure.
He's on loan for Man City. So he looked like probably had found a team that appreciated him and was showcasing the talent that probably made Man City spend all that money they did on him. But Leicester City, I mean, MJ, and some people who believe in fairy tales talk of them going and winning a Champions League. Probably it has been that kind of year, but good things, by the time a Champions League final comes, we'll be done with this year. So we can just, with Trump winning, Leicester City winning, all those Swan events, we can just look at them and say they're done. But I don't think they'll go through with this because of experience Sevilla have as far as being on the continent is concerned. So I do fancy Sevilla going through that one. The other interesting one for me in this one is the Man City Monaco game. Most people are not aware of Monaco. I think they have the highest scoring side in Europe, if I'm not mistaken. I stand to be corrected. So Man City should be very careful how they approach this game, because one too many English sides have looked at Monaco as a small team and they have left with bloody noses. Arsenal is one case point. Spurs recently. So Man City need to be very careful the way they approach that game. The good thing is Guardiola, he has been in Europe, been there, done it. Real Madrid, Napoli, also an interesting tie as well. Then Benfica, Dortmund also is a good game. You do fancy Benfica actually going through. They have impressive actually over 17 from the 17 games. The goal difference of 53 and
they scored 53
and they've conceded 16. I mean, that's second to none, just 17 games. So Man City have to be careful. Porto, Juventus want to win the Champions League. Everything they have done, all the money they have spent on Higuain and who is all about them winning the Champions League. And Higuain looks like he's worth the money, because in the Torino game, the game they played the weekend, the 3-1 victory Juventus had, I mean, he scored two outstanding goals. The second goal was, for those who didn't watch it, go on YouTube, it perfect turn. So Juventus, for it's all about winning a Champions League. So I don't think Porto. So probably it's going to be an equally interesting game, but I don't think Juventus losing this. But keep your eyes out for Man City Monaco. Something's going to happen there.
Well, I wasn't going to comment anymore on the Champions League, but I feel that I have to defend my honour. Or that I think I have defended my honour, which is that it's true, Sevilla has the greater pedigree in Europe. They've won the Europa League three times in a row. They also have a much more fashionable manager, Jorge Sampaolini, who was also the manager of Chile, the great Chile side we all enjoyed watching at the World Cup 2014 and Copa in 2015. He's an all-action man. In fact, he plays football much like Pochettino does, all action, all aggression, all the time. What I will say that we need to consider in that tie is the level of focus both teams will bring. Sevilla are third in La Liga. They are 1 point behind Barcelona second, 7 behind Madrid in first. They're a team that will come into the game with league considerations on their mind. Leicester will be focused like a laser on that tie. Ranieri, I'm quite sure, has told his players all they need to do is get him 40 points or roughly close enough to make no difference by the time Sevilla rolls around. They'll, after that, by the time Sevilla comes, they'll give up on the league completely and prepare for those 7 games in the Champions League like it's the end of their lives. I've seen this twice before. I saw it with Liverpool 11 years ago. I saw it with Chelsea 4 years ago. When teams like that focus, you'd be surprised what they can pull out. We also saw what Leicester did in the group stages, much to the disbelief of many who thought they wouldn't even win a game. I'm backing Leicester to go very far in the Champions League, and I'll stand by that prediction.
Oh, but again, just to clarify on your argument, you're saying they'll do very well in Europe, having secured a safe position in the league. However,
I think to the extent that Because the only thing that Leicester have to concern themselves in the league right now is relegation.
Yeah, but they're doing badly on that front. They're not too far.
No, they're not too far. On the other hand, they're not in the relegation zone either. So now we have to ask. Now we have to ask ourselves, because let's consider the fight to avoid relegation, Leicester's title challenge this year. So as always, you have to ask yourself, who are their competition, and who do we have? We have Hull. I don't think anybody here thinks Leicester is going to finish below Hull. We have Swansea. Again, how many people think Leicester is going to finish below Swansea? And then, so that means there's really only that spot of 18th they need to be afraid of. And we have candidates for that position like Crystal Palace, Sunderland, Middlesbrough. So I mean, you have to believe that Leicester, Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace and Sunderland to think relegation is going to be an issue. What Renier needs to know, knows he has 16 points right now for 16 games. By the time the Champions League comes back, we'll be at around 24, 25 games. If Leicester can be around the 30-point mark by then, it's pretty guaranteed they won't get relegated. Because they would have to pretty much lose every game and watch Middlesbrough, Sunderland and Crystal Palace walk past them to get relegated. I don't think that's going to happen. But they have to get 14 more points. That's what he says. Give me 4-5 wins and we can put the league to bed. We can forget about the league and focus just on the Champions League. That's what he'll be telling his players.
Well, between now and then, as you said, let's watch Leicester and see if they're going to... because now they're focusing on the league. So let's see how they do.
Doubting? 5 wins. That's what they need. If they win 5 games, if they won 5 more games by the time Sevilla comes, they won't be relegated.
Well, I would say I would say 2016 is one of those years that support the whole Black Swan theory. So, MJ, Champions League final is going to be played next year. We'll be done with this year. All these events that have taken place that have been unpredictable, like Leicester City winning the league, Leicester City winning a Champions League.
The harvest probably, of tomorrow, buddy.
Probably. You're one year late.
The seeds of the present lead to the harvest of the future.
Right. Guys, let's have a look at local football. What's happening?
MJ came out and said he was a better man. His apology about Conte.
Waiting for yours.
Of course, he was. For our regular listeners, MJ was referring to the fact that I was skeptical about AC Villa firing their coach and hiring Bisasso to replace him. But somehow he has pushed them up. It's still just the halfway point, so probably I'll hold back on my. I won't eat humble pie till the end of the season. But it's halfway point of the Azam Premier League, and it's going to take a 2-month break because of the small issue that Uganda Cranes have qualified for AFCON. So the league will resume in February. And KCCA did manage to finish top of the league, at least at the halfway point. I think they've been the most impressive side, hands down. But compared to the amount of money in Spain, I think it's only fair. It's only fair that MJ has his makeup.
But, buddy, putting aside money, let's appreciate the football on the field. In our league, it's so comfortable to say that there's no quality to be found. So when you find something that's football that you can actually watch without turning your head away in boredom, I think we need to appreciate, no matter how much or how little money went into it.
That's MJ's opinion. KCCA don't play good football. Anyway, KCCA, the game before the break, they took on URA and they did lose 1-0 in that particular tie. AC Villa took on Kirinyeses, they won 2-0. AC Villa team, who are now second, they're just 1 point behind KCCA after the 50 games that have been played. AC Villa, of course, had the whole event, and I'm too skeptical about it. But there's always things work out at times, because you can have your team go travel, and somehow the closeness and the fact that you're monitoring the players, they're in camp, somehow it can work in your way. So when they came back, they had to play Vipers. They requested that game to be postponed because they arrived, I think, 2 days before that game, and they went straight into camp. But they managed to win that game 2-1. And I feel probably if AC Villa do win this title, that particular game will be the turning point where it all happened for them. Because I don't think AC have been the best team in this league. Somehow by default they are top, simply because the opposition is just not doing well. Vipers are struggling. And of course Vipers fired the entire coaching staff. So you do fancy it's going to be between KCCA and AC Villa. Dumparaka are in third position with 25 points, but you do feel that they are title pretenders. But somehow they managed to learn how to win games away from home. They beat Sajoni Paints in Jinja 1-0. That was match day 15, so credit to them for that. So, as I mentioned, in first place we have KCCA with 32 points. Villa is in second place with 31 points. So, Dumparaka in third with 25 points. Then Vipers are in fourth with 24 points. Then, as far as relegation is concerned, the three teams that are occupying those slots, surprisingly, are teams from Jinja. Because last season, for most of our listeners, we didn't mention how well the teams were doing, the Jinja-based teams were doing at home, because teams were struggling to go and pick up points in Jinja. But you have a team like Odumparaka who struggled in their travels, beating you at home, then probably you should think that you will be playing in the big league sooner or later. So at the moment, the teams that occupy the relegation zone are Bull FC, who have 13 points. Then there's Kirinya SS on 9 points, and GMC on 7 points. Two of those three are definitely going down. Then I'll just turn to the top scorers at the halfway point. Geoffrey Serunkuma, another person who has made me eat humble pie for him. The system suits him and the way they play, because he's good in the air, and KCA play with wing backs, which at times does not even cross the halfway line. He's just stationed there at the halfway point going forward. So he does get crosses in. And Geoffrey Serunkuma is impressive in the air. He has 9 goals so far for KCCA. Shaban Muhammad, Odumparaka striker, the so-called Football of the Year 2016, is on 8 goals. Then Tabu, that's AC Villa striker, has 7 points. Then seven goals. Then Idris Luvega, the Poland striker, also has 7 goals. So that's how the league is at the moment. Then I'll just hint at something small. I did mention the whole issue of Shaban Muhammad being voted to the best footballer of the year 2016. Of course, he has got a lot of stick from the public and most analysts that no one deserves this accolade more than Dennis Onyango, because of what he has managed to achieve for his club side, Sundowns. Not only the club side, but also he has some. He's a goalkeeper who has got Cranes back into AFCON. So probably deserve it. And I wouldn't agree more, because without a shadow of a doubt, Onyango has been the best footballer that Uganda has produced this year. But because goalkeepers struggle to get recognition and all, probably that's what people thought. But the entire genesis of this is simple. I mentioned it on a WhatsApp group. I think Dawdy, I shared Dawdy. I don't think I'm just... That the issue was FUFA, with all their wisdom, or lack of it, decided that the football of the year is going to be decided by the public. I have my issues as far as democracy is concerned. Because at times, what the majority of the people think may be wrong, but because of democracy, you first take it. So FUFA, in their right mind, said that this award is going to be voted by the public. It was voted by the public. We all know Odumparaka has a huge following. And of course, if Shaban Muhammad was nominated, then definitely he would what? He would win, which is what happened. So as far as that is concerned, that was level. So people were coming out and saying that it was wrong for Shaban Muhammad to win. Probably should go and look at the criteria with which he won. But FUFA, on their hand, where they will take blame for this is the fact that they named him and they named the award Football of the Year. They would have said, why did people go and say Football of the Year, fans Football of the Year? Because what the fans think and the effects of democracy are not always the right thing. So what happened is Muhammad was voted the best footballer, right? He wasn't. If FUFA had said that we're going to do delegates to vote this, or I don't know, use any other criteria where you have people who are somehow level-headed voting for the best football of the year, then probably Onyango would have taken this. So for everyone that's critical of Shaban Muhammad winning this, it's sad that the man, he's young, that his spotlight is being taken away. But you do question the criteria, and sadly again, it's FUFA. I feel they got their English wrong completely. But credit to him, he has won. The record books will always show that he was football of the year 2016. And of course he got a car and something else, so credit to him. Then lastly, before I wrap up this, the small issue of preparations of the Uganda Cranes. And of course, yesterday Coach Mitch announced that there's going to be a big friendly for the Cranes. I don't know how big, but he mentioned that Uganda is going to take on Slovakia on 8th of January.
Slovakia, you mean?
Slovakia in Dubai. So Slovakia And Ivory Coast had two friendlies that Uganda Cranes are going to play in preparation for their first game in AFCON on January 17th against Ghana. The big question here is, how do you pick your opposition? Your friendly opposition in line with the team you're going to play. So you're going to pick a European team, probably. I don't know what criteria you use. Maybe they were just available. So I don't know what mindset they have, but those games will be on. So Slovakia and Ivory Coast are two friendlies that the Ghana Cranes are going to play in Dubai before they start their AFCON title hunt or just participation. I don't know which one to use. Against Ghana.
I suspect, buddy, that those teams were not selected by Mitchell. I suspect they were selected with an eye towards revenue, because Ivory Coast and Slovakia are teams who may draw more money in Dubai in terms of crowd attention. That may be what's going on, because normally what you do when you're gearing up is that you play weak teams so that you can build up confidence in the players. It's a chance for you to see how the players play with each other in a game that's testing, but which you expect to win. And Ivory Coast and Slovakia are just so far ahead of where we are at the moment that these teams were picked for reasons other than tournament preparation.
But isn't it a good thing if they're perhaps, quote-unquote, a bit out of our league, so that when we lose, at least they highlight your weaknesses, which you can work on?
You don't win a tournament based on neutralizing your weaknesses. You win a tournament based on emphasizing your strengths. And the key for us in these games is to fine-tune the team we want to play, how we want them to play. And that's what these games are meant for.
I'll just say this before. I was part of course, I had my short career in football. And I remember the pre-season games always we played. Of course, so as a coach, Ian always plays the hardest game before the league starts, which for me didn't make sense. I would actually agree with MJ that at times you need to boost your players' confidence. And a 6-0 victory before your first game may not be bad, but I feel the confidence is up. Before that, you can play the hard game. And they sweat it out, eventually lose 3-0, but the easy game has to come mate after that, just to boost their confidence before the actual tournament starts. So for me, I do pray that these games will take place, because you know Uganda somehow, Slovakia may not be in Dubai at the time, Ivory Coast may not be, so somehow they will say we'll play some other team. But the preparation needs to be done. Mitchell is already in Dubai as we speak right now. He's laid out the plans for the Cranes which are going to follow. But Jan 17th is around the corner. It's, I think, less than a month. So let's brace ourselves for Uganda at AFCON.
I never thought I would live to see this happen. So next year might be our year. But you mentioned 2016 is the freak year. But who knows? Maybe next
Black
year is
Swan.
Our year.
Black Swan is done this year.
But one thing I know for sure, just before we go, I believe Mitchell does coach tackling. So I think on that part, we'll be safe. With regards to opposition coming at us.
We'll talk about Mitchell after AFCON. We'll definitely get into him.
Right, well, thank you once again, gents. Thank you for joining us on Full-Time Banter. It's been a good episode. Lots of football and even more football to come. So why not join us again next week for another episode of Full-Time Banter.